And once they start thinking in the context of the absentee ballot, it's really much less foreign to them, and I think more acceptable to them. I'm particularly interested in the concept ultimately for some of these special districts that are out in the more rural areas where it may be a little more difficult for people to get into the polls, where the turnout's may be very low. I think it's a great convenience factor, as well as increasing voter participation and keeping costs down. So I think that I think it has great possibilities. Representative Jolin?
Since everybody else is editorializing, I think that, frankly, it's a critical right and privilege that we have to vote and as voters. However, I believe that you're going to bring forth a lot of problems. Although it is the right of every individual to vote, however informed they may be or may not be, I think that you're going to get a lot of folks that aren't going to know really whom they're voting for by doing their homework, if you will, and doing that background work. And also in regard specifically to issues, I believe that many of those folks will continue not to be informed and take that or make that effort to do so. I think we're looking at a road of a lot of trouble, and that's why I shall continue to oppose this.
The other comments? Peggy, the one thing I would say, that one of the things we saw in the San Diego election, when they sent out the ballot by mail, they sent out a sample ballot, interestingly, with arguments pro and con, similar to what one of the bills we sent out of here earlier, which is not met with kindly fate on the other side, but the allowing for simplified arguments, both pro and con. Now, mechanically, how they did that in California and what their laws provide, I'm not sure, but it did seem to us that that provided a nice, neat package to the voters, in fact, to inform themselves, at least to that extent, of what they were voting on. So I think it has possibilities. Certainly, I would hope down the road might alleviate some of your concerns, but I certainly respect the concerns that you have.
In addition to that, I also see a great deal of difference between this and the absentee ballot, other than the fact that the absentee ballot comes to our homes, or in our particular cases, I receive one. An absentee ballot is one that we request because we want to vote, and we have issues or individuals that we want to and choose to and are informed about, hopefully, to vote for. And this will just automatically come to every registered voter's home, and I'm not so sure that all those people have done their homework.
Any further comments? Representative Anderson?
Might as well follow an editorial comment. I think Oregonians have always been proud of their leadership role and participation in innovative measures. Voting by mail is convenient, saves money, it will increase participation, and I think we ought to support it and pass it out to the floor.
Any other editorial comments, Representative Wayne?
Mr. Chairman, it's not an editorial comment necessarily, but Representative Mason said he was enthusiastic about this process. I just wish he could have been in San Diego with us. He'd be a lot more enthusiastic than he is right now.
I detected a great deal of enthusiasm coming from that side.
Yes, indeed. Yeah.
Okay, are we ready to vote? All right, clerk, call the roll.
Anderson?
Aye.
Ford?
Aye.
Jolin?
No.
Lombard?
Aye.
Mason?
Aye.
Otto?
Aye.
Rutherford?
Aye.
Mr. Chairman?
Aye.
Okay, bill passes. It's on its way. Mr. Chairman, you want to go?
No, you're doing fine. You're doing just fine.
Is this rest and relaxation day? I want you to start out next.
Want me to start out either way?
I can't arrange music for this one. I don't.
No music for this one. We will carry it. Okay, the next bill on the agenda, Senate Bill 422. Do we have any sign up on this, or is this ready for action? apparently. We had the testimony Monday, so I guess... I'll just simply ask staff, are there any further amendments or things to be considered on the bill? Representative Mason?
Yes, on page 3 of the bill, line 7. I would move deletion of the phrase statement, comma, not exceeding 12 words, comma, the candidate's qualifications and experience. And then at line 16, I would move 16 and 17, I would move the deletion of the phrase following the name of each candidate shall be a statement not exceeding 12 words of the candidate's qualifications and experience if the statement is included in the petitioner declaration. And then on page, again, page 3, line 26, 27, 28, and 29, deletion of the statement following the name of each candidate, et cetera, et cetera. Mr. Chairman, I am in support of the motion, but I might, I'm going to vote for the bill, but I've never agreed to ballot slogans when we fought that battle.
Yeah.
And ballot slogans, I don't think should be extended to anybody. I realize the argument is that if everybody else has got them, why shouldn't we have them? But two rights don't make a wrong, and I just...
Two wrongs don't make a right.
Two wrongs don't make a right. And I just don't think we should extend them to any farther. There is an argument for equity, but I'm for abolishing ballot slogans for everybody. And I'm not for extending it to anybody.
All right, you've heard the motion. Any further discussion on the motion?
Mr.
Representative Otto?
There is a provision in here, and I know when I read the bill, I found it, that dealt with Representative Mason's concern. And I think, I can't find it right now, but anyway, I think there's words to the effect that if ballot slogans are deleted, then it would not apply, or it would apply also to candidates for the Metropolitan Service District. So we've already taken care of it, and if I can find it, I'll oppose your motion on the basis that you would have to go back to the Senate for concurrence.
Mr. Chairman.
It's in the bill somewhere, but
Section
5.
Okay. Well, I realize that is in there, except I'm arguing on substance that regardless of whether or not we abolish ballot slogans for everybody, assuming we're not going to abolish them, and I think there's a very good chance there will be no abolition of ballot slogans this session, that we should not extend them. Just because everybody else has ballot slogans, I don't think MSD should extend it to MSD. It's a bad law to start with. Bad law should not be extended.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Whalen.
For Representative Mason's information, it's really not dead, but it will be in a conference committee for long.
Well, I guess I just want to nail one more nail in the coffin
here. I agree with you.
Yeah, this...
Representative Ford, you had your hand.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, I was wondering where the ballot slogan bill is right now and what condition it's in.
Third reading on the Senate floor today.
It's third reading today.
But it has substantial amendments.
Gosh, I better get my speech over to him.
Well, I believe that's when they amended to remove the publication of all...
That's exactly right.
Publication of sample ballots in the newspapers prior to the elections, doing away with all notice of ballots and what have you. Representative Rutherford.
Chairman.
Well, I just wondered if the chairman intended to amend that in the congressional reinforcement bill.
Okay.
Any other further comments with regards to Representative Mason's motion? Yes, Representative Otto.
Mr. Chairman, Karen pointed it out to me, and it's on page 4, section 5, line 23 and 24. If House Bill 2344, 1981, becomes law, section 3 of this act is repealed. And anyway, for that reason, finding this language in the bill, I'm going to oppose Representative Mason's motion.
All right, the motion before the committee then is the deletion then on page 3 actually, if we look at it correctly, Representative Mason's deleting all of the boldface language, isn't that?
That's correct, Representative Lombardi.
All right, clerk will call the roll.
Usually phrased.
Anderson?
Aye.
Ford?
No.
Jolin?
No.
Lombard?
Aye.
Mason?
Aye.
Otto?
No.
Rutherford?
Aye.
Mr. Chairman?
Aye.
Motion passes. Motion's on the bill. Representative Whalen moves that Senate Bill 422, as further amended by the committee, be sent to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Any further discussion? All right, clerk will call the roll.
Anderson?
Aye.
Ford?
Aye.
Jolin?
Aye.
Lombard?
Aye.
Mason?
Aye.
Otto?
Aye.
Rutherford?
Aye.
Mr. Chairman?
Aye.
Passes. Now into public hearing on House Bill 2986. The bill is presently on the table. The chair would move that House Bill 2986 be removed from the table. Clerk, call the roll.
Anderson?
Aye.
Ford?
Aye.
Jolin?
Aye.
Lombard?
Aye.
Mason?
Aye.
Otto?
Aye.
Rutherford?
Aye.
Mr. Chairman?
Aye.
Okay, Representative Grinnell or Monty? Okay.
You should have signed the last one, Otto.
I'll assign. How about Representative Mason? Tom, would you carry 422A?
Fine.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, Mr. Vice Chairman. For the record, my name is Monty King, and I work for Representative Bill Grinnell. I think you have a copy of our testimony in front of you. Basically, it's just a clarification of the intent of the political, or at least our idea of the intent of the nomination system of the major political parties. There's been five cases over the last little over 2 years where there have been vacancies created in the office of political party by actions of the first political party, and I'd rather not say Democratic and Republican because I really don't want to get this into a partisan type of atmosphere. But what's happening, basically, it happened to Representative Grinnell twice, is that he won his political party nomination. He lost a write-in nomination on the other side by maybe 4 or 5 votes or 10 votes against the person he beat in his own major political party, and there was a vacancy created as a result of 249-048, and the other major political party filled a vacancy where there was no person even filed for those offices. And that's basically what it is.
Run that by me again. The vacancy occurred because the winning write-in candidate resigned. Is that it?
No, the winning write-in candidate was disqualified because of 249.048, which says that a person who loses in his own major political party nominating process is disqualified from taking another.
Okay, he was ineligible. And so then the other political party filled the vacancy with another qualified person, I take it, person who was otherwise qualified to run.
Correct. It's our feeling that there's a process for those people, if they wish to file in the normal manner back in March, they can file for election. Since there was nobody that was filed for those elections, our idea is that if somebody's interested enough to run, they have three options actually. One is to file for election. The other is to run as an independent candidate, or to wage a significant write-in ballot campaign.
Does this arise in any other context, or is this the only way it comes up?
That's the only way it comes up.
Mr. Chairman?
Representative Anderson?
correct me if I'm wrong, but I think we have a member of this legislature this session from Springfield who is in the state legislature because of the law the way it is, who was nominated by a political party after the primary and was successful and gained the office of state representative.
That's my understanding.
Set aside a coin to show the success of the law the way it is. Bernmeier.
Yeah. Is that a statement to me or?
Well, and you think that's bad?
There's another way to do it, I guess, is that it was possible for Representative Meyer to file in March. It's also possible to run as an independent later on in the year and have a significant campaign without the actions of one party's nomination process affecting what happens in the other major political party. That's the only, we're just trying to maintain the separation between them. You either have an open primary, well, what's considered an open primary or not. It's up to you guys and ladies.
Any further questions?
So your theory basically is just that the people ought to make up their mind early to run and that sort of thing. Is that the idea?
Right. That there are three ways already to get a nomination or to run for office in the November election. You either file in March, or run a significant write-in campaign, or to run as an independent.
Okay, any further questions of Monty? Okay, thank you, Monty. Anybody else wishing to testify on House Bill 2986? We don't have anybody else signed up. Yeah, close the public hearing on 2986. We'll go to House Bill 3043, and I apologize, Representative Bauman, when I've looked over the list, and I honestly couldn't read your last name on this list. You were waiting to testify on.
We have readability test, remind you.
Right. Thank you. Here to testify on, my name is Rick Bauman, and I'm here to testify on 3043. One comment on the last bill, we have two members that are in the legislature because of that glitch in the law. Representative Magruder also filled a nomination that was vacated by an ineligible candidate. 3043 is very similar, I see, to Senate Bill 722, is it, the bill you also have up this morning, 723? Can't read my writing.
I don't feel so bad.
It has to do with the opportunity for individuals to vote preference, and in my bill, an uncommitted vote in the presidential preference primary. I think there's a substantial difference between the two votes, and I'd like to run you through 3043 quickly and then just comment on the difference. 3043 amends three sections of the election law. The first is the procedure for selection of delegates to the National Convention, and this would allow, in section one of the bill, allows for provision for within the party caucuses that follow the primary election for the selection of an uncommitted slate of delegates. They obviously would not fall under the provisions of line 19 to 22 of the bill, which are where they are pledged to a candidate. Section 2 amends the section relating to the conduct of the election and the official primary election ballot, and that just simply states that there needs to be the amended language on page 2, lines 6 and 7. Stating that there shall be a line provided for the uncommitted delegates. And finally, section 3 is the section relating to the design and content of the official ballot, and that is just a reaffirmation of what the title should be for the uncommitted delegates selection. Now, the reason I think this is important is if you look back over the last couple, three presidential elections, we have the Secretary of State drawing up the names and announcing the names of the presidential candidates in February before virtually any presidential primary in the nation, with the exception of maybe one or two now. And then we have a period of time where candidates who are not satisfied with that list because of their exemption can petition to get on with, I believe it's a 4,000 signature requirement, and that has to be accomplished by the same filing date we all live under, 10 weeks before the election. We've seen examples of how inadequate this can be. Last year, the question was with former President Ford, and Secretary Paulus was undecided until the last minute. That changed her mind several times through that period of whether he should or should not be included. 1976, the concern was over Governor Jerry Brown of California, who in the end was left off and had to run a writing campaign. In 68, there was another substantial writing campaign. What I'm trying to point out is the time that decision is made is well before the contestants that we will indeed be faced with in Oregon are actually decided. The second point to be made looking at the last election is that indeed there were a lot of concerned individuals who did not have a preference either between former Ambassador Bush and Governor Reagan at that time on the Republican side, or between President Carter and Senator Kennedy, I guess it was, on the Democratic side, and seriously wanted to have, I believe, not an opportunity to say that they had no preference, because indeed they may have had preference, but to say they do not want this vote in May to bind our delegates to the National Convention in July or August, depending on the party. And I think that's a reasonable option should be made available, that those people who would like to either have the flexibility of a candidate who rises later and pledge uncommitted with, or a favorite son type situation that could use, in effect, the uncommitted slot could be used for, or the case where they are truly do not have a preference or do not want to be bound at this time. And I think it's a legitimate concern and should be addressed. That is a substantial difference between no preference, because I think no preference connotes a lack of interest or a lack of understanding, and I don't think that we should respond to that. I think people who go to the polls, or if your bill works out, who open their mail and vote, they are taking, in effect, the same burden we do when we face an issue, and I think we should make a choice. They do have the option of leaving it blank, and I don't think that vote should be counted in the delegate selection. However, those people who have a true no preference and wish to be represented that way, I think should have, truly wish an uncommitted delegate to represent them at the convention in the summer should have that opportunity, and that's why I am suggesting House Bill 3043.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Otto.
Several questions, Cindy Bum. Number one, does this violate any party rules of either the Democratic or the Republican Party, do you know of?
No, there would have to be an adjustment. This law states now that it's the state central committees that provide the mechanisms for selecting the delegates, the fine-tuning of the mechanism that's outlined in the bill, and there would have to be changes in those mechanisms to allow an uncommitted caucus to form at their district conventions and to choose the individuals involved.
Party rules then would have to be changed.
Yes, they are basically, I think, adjusted each time there's an election. Each time there's a presidential election.
The next question I have is, could the two bills be combined since they're amending the same section, do you think?
Oh, I think so. But my point is I prefer the line to say uncommitted as no preference. I think there's a difference there. And the other opportunity you'd have with my bill is that the very next section of law, my Section 3 amends 254-145. 254-155 is ballot rotation, and if that bill is in trouble, I certainly wouldn't object to a repealer of the following section being added, given the discord in the Senate. Very nice relating clause for you.
Questions of committee members? Rick, let me ask you this from a mechanical standpoint. Now, when you're looking then at your primary election ballot, and, you know, today we look at it and we vote for the names of individuals. Now, most voters, I don't know whether they really understand that in doing that, that in fact they are sending a message to the party conventions that the district conventions that we hold in the state, that they shall select a proportionate share of delegates to send back to their national. I don't think most voters even think of it in that terminology. So mechanically, what would you have? You'd have the list of the names of the candidates, and then you'd have a separate line that tries to tell the voters that something to the effect that you can also, if you check here, you're going to allow the district conventions to send a certain number of uncommitted delegates?
That's correct. The other thing they're voting for, and I'm sure, as you say, very few draw the attachment, is they're voting at the same time for a precinct committee person who has the name of a presidential candidate or an uncommitted listed after his or her name. And it is those individuals who are actually doing the selecting. Right, I think there is a huge gap between what people perceive they're doing and what the actual mechanics of what they are doing. But I don't think this does any violation to that. They are voting for an uncommitted slate, and through some mechanism that just turned into an uncommitted delegate.
Okay, I've just got some mechanical questions, I guess, as to how it would work. Any other questions from committee members?
Did you want to put rotation in the ballot slogan rendition, or did you want to put some of those on?
I mean, we'll give it a thought to that. Might be easier to consider a Senate bill for that.
That's true.
Well, I agree.
Well, maybe you could use mine for this, since this is not a major thing and could be addressed in 2 years, and use the Senate bill.
Chairman and I have not foreclosed any options.
Right.
Put it in that language.
It's time to be creative the next
time. Okay.
Thank you.
Thanks very much, Rick. And again, I apologize for making you wait. Julie Gianella?
Can you go to the bathroom without getting morbid?
I did that yesterday and I missed it. I was carrying a bill on the floor.
The motion
to concur, yeah, I stepped out just for that same purpose, and I didn't get back for 10 minutes. They just peel you off.
Yeah.
I just read this last night, and I hope I understand it all, and I think I can keep it short and simple. I'd like to urge you to vote no on HB 3043.
Excuse me, Julie, would you just state your name for the record, please?
Julie Gianella.
And your address, please.
20342 Olmsted Road, Northeast, Aurora, Oregon.
Okay. Thank you.
The law we have now about delegates being committed to a candidate is exactly the way it should be. HB 3043 would confuse and nullify the whole election process and deceive the precinct people who trusted the delegates to follow through with their commitment. Why have a convention without commitment?
Okay, any questions, Julie?
You understand this doesn't rule out people running who are committed to candidates, but it allows additionally a slate of uncommitted delegates. In other words, it would allow you to vote for
so many
Reagan, Ford, and uncommitted. If you want to.
I think the situation, though, Bill, is that...
But the people are trusting you to vote for who you...
Well, the people who ran and said that they wanted to vote for somebody would be committed to those people. But the people who ran and said that they were uncommitted would be uncommitted.
I think the question, though, in part is this. I believe the Democratic Party has, Mr. Chairman, or you or Representative Otto could correct me on this, but I think their party rules now provide, do they not, that precinct committee people must designate in those presidential election years whom they support or if they have no preference. Is that correct?
I don't know.
I think that is accurate.
It is.
Yeah.
It's state law also. It was amended last session.
Yeah.
Representative Klein.
But it simply says that by party rule,
it's
they can.
Party rule also.
But the Republican Party, I believe, does not have that requirement. The question I have, though, notwithstanding that party rule in the Democratic Party, right now, if you have a slate of Democratic candidates in the primary, the district conventions must select their delegates on the basis of the proportionate vote, which is really totally unrelated to the precinct committee people support or don't support. And what this is throwing in is that, and that's why I raised the question with Representative Bauman in terms of the mechanics of the thing, you're throwing in a whole separate box, it seems to me, that allows an individual, after that individual has said, I support so-and-so or so-and-so in the party primary, to come in and also say that even though I support so-and-so or so-and-so, I prefer that the delegates that are selected from my district, from my district, go as uncommitted delegates to the convention.
I read it differently. Maybe I misunderstood. I thought that you ran a slate of delegates who would back a particular candidate, and then it provides additionally for a slate of uncommitted delegates.
No, we used.